Big thanks to HelloFresh.com for supporting Current Geek. Receive $30 off your first week of deliveries when you go to HelloFresh.com and use the offer code CURRENTGEEK30. Again, that's HelloFresh.com and the offer code CURRENTGEEK30 to get $30 off your first week of deliveries.
I have
Current Geek!
Current Geek!
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Current Geek, the weekly proceedings of the meetings of the Frog Pants All-Stars, geeks in the world, and you to keep you current on all things that matter most. I'm Scott Johnson with Tom Merritt.
It is my pleasure to gavel these proceedings into order, Scott Johnson, and begin the weekend the only way you should, with a little Current Geeking.
Yeah, and Cinco de Mayo today. So
that's right.
Go get your taco.
Tacos for everyone.
Yeah, taco bowls, tacos, tacos.
Perhaps you would like a current taco.
Ooh, I don't know. Do you want a current taco or do you want an older?
I don't know what current taco. In other words, freshly made. I don't know if I want currants.
All right. Well, you're definitely going to have a current taco with us tonight. Now, before we go too far and bring our guests in, it's a big week. Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 came out. I just want people to know right up front, we're not going to spoil anything, giving away any story things or character things or anything. But I just want to get like a quick Tom and Scott take. I really, really liked it. Tom, how'd you feel about the movie?
I did not like it as much as Volume 1.
Mm-hmm.
That is not to say that I did not like it.
Yeah.
I thought it was a lot of fun. My non-spoilery critique is that I liked in Volume 1 that they were not the story.
Mm.
The Guardians work best for me when there is like a big Marvel story and these outcasts kind of worm their way in a way it feels like, what are they doing here? And that's fun. This one, the story is about them. It's about Star-Lord. So I kind of missed that outsider-y perspective. But overall, had a great time.
Yeah, it's a good movie. So let's get with our guests. I know they both saw it too, so we'll get their take as well. Let's start with Charles McFall. You know him as the rock god of podcasting and co-founder of the Giant Size Team Up Network. Charles, welcome to the show.
Thank you. That's never sounded so glorious as when you said it, Scott.
Wow, really? All right. Silky smooth is how that came out. Yeah.
I got to say, see, I saw it today. And the second the actual film came on, I got this huge goofy grin on my face. Didn't go away all day. So I feel like Lenny from Mice and Men. I just want to hug it and pet it and take it home. I loved it, actually, I think, Tom, I liked it a little bit more than the first one. But I get what you're saying.
Yeah. Just watch the rabbits, Charles.
Right. Yeah, I was going to say, that story doesn't turn out so good for
No, it does not.
My memory serves.
Look at the flowers.
Yeah. Charles, it's good to have you here. Also joining us, the one, the only, the Brian Dunaway, a co-host of mine on two shows, Film Sack and Boob, as well as the host of Coast to Coast, or Comics Coast to Coast, rather. It is Brian Dunaway, everybody. Welcome to the show.
There you go. I'm not as current as you geeks, as I have not seen Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh, I thought you had.
Yet.
Oh, bummer.
No, I'm going after Boop tomorrow.
Oh, all right.
You posted something about it so good today or something. I thought I saw it on Facebook.
You never know with Dunaway. Sometimes he just types.
I was talking about something else. Oh, it's so good. Revenge of the Fifth.
There you go. Yeah, may the Revenge of the Fifth be with you is the phrase. Very well done. Anyway, it's great to have you both here. We have a lot to talk about, well beyond Guardians of the Galaxy, and it all begins with these here headlines.
Herbert Hoover, Secretary of Commerce in 1922, finds infant radio facilitates news gathering, as do many others in high public office.
Tom?
The trailer for the Dark Tower movie adaptation of the Stephen King books is out. Appears to have something from almost every one of the 8 books in the series, plus allusions to many other King books that cross over into the Dark Tower universe. In the trailer, there is something related to Pennywise, the clown. Dark Tower comes to theaters August 4th. I'm curious, you guys excited about the Dark Tower? Do you know the Dark Tower? Do you care about the Dark Tower?
I'm gonna jump here before Scott does because, oh my God, he hasn't shut up since, like, I don't know, 1998 about the Dark Tower. Anyway.
Yeah he's right. I will fully cop to that, by the way. I will fully cop to the idea that I am not the right person to ask about this trailer because I have biases that sink really deep.
Scott has not forgotten the face of his father.
No, I have not. My hands move without me even noticing, and bullets are everywhere. So it's real hard for me. But anyway, Dunaway, you've seen it. What'd you think?
Right, man? Right. The trailer looks. I'm not as tied to the Dark Tower. I've only read the first book. But I love the trailer. But I only watched it once. Did I miss Pennywise the Clown? Fill me in, because I must have missed it.
There's a wreck of some kind of circus type thing, and it says Pennywise.
I must have missed that. I was being too blown away by the bullet handling of the gunslinger as he makes the bullets into his revolver. That was some good looking stuff.
Yeah, it's a little, well, all right, I'm not gonna say anything yet. Charles will take it over to you, your impressions. Also, I have things to say, but we'll hear Charles first here.
So I'm the filthy casual. I've not read the books. I read like the first volume of the graphic novel that didn't barely touch the universe. But watching this trailer, I loved Idris Elba and the ballet of bullets. That's what I'd like to call him. He just had the smooth movements and the lines. I'm sure these are quotes from the book, but yeah, I don't kill with my hands. I kill with my heart. And I'm excited. I am ready to see it. And I think, Matthew McConaughey looks, because he was great in True Crime as a gritty, down to earth, or more serious character than the all right guy we know. So, but yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It looks awesome.
He'll be great. I'm not worried about him at all. I'm not worried about Idris Elba. The casting's great. None of those things are an issue. My issue isn't even with like them. If you're a fan of the books, this will make sense. But it's basically meant to be a new turn of the tower. This is like a new story. It doesn't have to be ripped directly from the books, and I'm totally cool with that too. My problem is, at least totally initially, and again, I'm not about to prejudge this thing, nor would I ever miss it, because I've been waiting for this movie since I was a kid. I love those books. I've read them 5 times over, all 7 books, either through audio or regular reading, and I love them. And I have pictures in my head that are probably not fair about what that world's like. The tone of this was a little more Matrix than his original inspirations, which were Middle Earth and Clint Eastwood. That's where his inspiration came from, and I'm not feeling that yet. That doesn't mean I won't. Trailers are sometimes deceiving. This needs to apply to as big an audience as possible, but I need the wasteland of a potential apocalyptic alternate future /past/present. There's a lot in there that I just don't know about yet. So,
well, the color palette, right? Yeah. You change that color palette to be a little redder, and I think your reaction changes a lot.
Probably, yeah. Like I mean, I don't want to invoke Fury Road, but I'm going to anyway.
Oh my God!
I'm not sure what is that.
Brian
understands.
Furry Road. Yeah, Dunaway's reaction is the best, because he knows he's feigning as much surprise as humanly possible. But the reason I say that is there's a certain tone to the world is awful and has moved. The world has moved on, which is what the entire crux of the books are. And in my head, I see a certain thing. This seemed to spend a lot of time in like walking around on modern streets and spending too much time with Jake before he left.
Well, that's book 3, I think, right? Where we spend a lot of time with Jake in New York City.
Yeah.
And the trailer does show a lot of that, but there's a really good breakdown, and I think it was on The Verge, that kind of points out all of the different books that it pulls from. And they're like, we're not taking this trailer anyway is not taken from any one of the books. It's all over the place.
Yeah. And there's not, as far as I know, there's no talk of franchise here, but I assume there is. Everybody wants a franchise.
There has been talk about a TV spinoff.
Oh, okay. So that gives me hope. I mean,
I shouldn't say spinoff, because that makes it sound like it's going to be Joey, you know, friends. But I mean, like, I kill with my story. Whoa. Yeah.
What's wrong with that?
There's nothing wrong with Joey. All right,
I own the entire DVD of Joey.
Wait a minute,
you're the one who bought that.
What was that, like 5 episodes? Like how big is that DVD? It's not very long, right?
Right.
Here's the thing though. Like that, I'm fine with TV. In fact, I think TV's the better place for this. So I'm cool with them taking it there. I don't want them to cheapen it. And then I think current TV standards may not be the case. So I'm not going to have any prejudgment about that. My biggest thing is you've got 7 epic books that are either going to be crammed into 1 to 3 movies, or they're going to spread that over television. And there's just too much unknown. Like, I just can't make a judgment at this point.
So are they going to do a Stargate out of this? Because the movie was a totally different flavor than the TV series, but both had their own value. But People usually didn't like both. Either was one way or the other.
Yeah, the movie.
But you could go any way you wanted with Stargate. Dark Tower has a story.
That's why I'm a little disappointed hearing you guys talk about it. I knew it was multiple books, and you're telling me that they're taking all the books and putting it in one film. I honestly assumed and hoped it'd really be film one is more or less book one.
Yeah.
Or even the Harry Potter cheat where it's book one and two and a half. Mm-hmm.
The stories are out of sequence in a lot of ways. There's a lot of flashbacks and chicanery with time. And so they may just be, I don't think they're going to try to fit all the stories into the movie, but I do think we're taking a different approach.
Sure. This isn't going to be, for those familiar with The Gunslinger, the first book, this is probably not going to be Roland and Jake spending a month in the burned out underground tunnels that are full of mutants. That's probably not going to be a thing.
Go then. There are other worlds than these.
Right. Right. Oh my gosh. Just you saying the words has me excited. So to say I'm not excited about this movie would be a total lie. Like I am.
Long days and pleasant nights.
I am so excited about this movie. Thank you, Sai. I'm so excited about this movie I can barely stand myself. I'm just saying there's some things in that trailer tonally that I'm a little worried about. But cast-wise, there's no better Man in Black to pick. That is Randall Flagg, as far as I'm concerned. Without even seeing it, he's perfect for it. He would have been perfect in my head before this. And I love Idris Elba. He's going to be a great Roland. It's just the rest of it. So let's hope they execute. And it's more than just a Pennywise reference and a cat in a, you know, a pet cemetery.
There's a few other references, a few other Stephen King novel references, just as there are in the Dark Tower series.
Yeah, and if we're going to be honest, the Dark Tower kind of is the spine of his work. So much branches out from it or to it. It's the same Randall Flagg from The Stand.
Yeah,
that may be a spoiler, is it? I don't know. The Stand's an old book.
I don't know that it'll matter.
Not anymore. Yeah. It's too long. We've been, it's like 30 years, guys. It's since.
Oh, books, 35 is your window. You that up.
Yep. 5 years, Scott.
Oops. So you're talking about the tone. And I get from what I've seen in the trailer, that Middle Earth and all that. But would you agree with my friend Chris Wisdom in thinking that Zack Snyder might have directed it better?
Oh, no, I don't agree with that. I'm just going to go ahead and say your friend is wrong about that and need some help immediately. See what he can
do. Let's move on to another piece of news that was popular on our subreddit this week. The first part of the news is that Northeast Ohio still has several drive-in movie theaters.
Whoa.
That was news enough to me. Second part of the news, operators of those drive-ins are upset that Disney wants an even bigger cut of ticket sales for Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. And so the drive-ins are not going to show the movie. Not only did the rate go up, but Disney apparently requires a 3-week run of Guardians and a commitment to show other Disney movies like the documentary Born in China, which, as good of a documentary as it can be, probably isn't a big draw to drive-ins.
No,
because you're tuning your FM dial into the local channel to get the audio these days. Isn't that how it's done? It's not the speakers anymore. Right.
They have both. I actually have a drive-in in town.
Oh, yeah?
And our guy is fantastic. He orders bulbs from out of the country, and they're super bright, and everything looks great. And they do broadcast through the car radio. Of course, they've always got somebody after the show. It's like my cars did. What am I going to do? But I'm a little disappointed. Well, I'm not disappointed. I'm not disappointed or surprised that they're doing this. This is typical. This has been a move that the distribution places like Disney has been pushing for a long time. They're pushing around these theater owners even more than they ever have in the past. And the drive-in theaters really feel it because it's real tight there.
Well, yeah, there's maybe 1, 2, 3 per state or something. Like there's not hardly any left in comparison. So if anyone's going to get the shaft, they're the vinyl of the movie world. Mm. And that's cool that they exist and you can go and say, oh, I'm in a car. I'm watching a movie like when I was a kid. This is amazing. It's a great little boutique experience. But I don't know that we should expect them to be able to strike the best deals with Hollywood anymore.
Right.
Well, and even the small guys.
None of them.
Go ahead.
Yeah. None of them do. None of the theater places do. I honestly feel like that, the movie industry itself is trying to push out movie theater owners. I don't know what they're positioning themselves to, but we've really felt it over the last couple of years as far as what we're seeing in the industry, that they're just really going, give us more of the take, let us take the take longer. You can make money on popcorn and soda. Good luck.
Yeah. That's hard.
And, I think the
movie industry realizes that they have direct distribution right into people's homes as a hammer to hold over the theater owner's head.
Yeah.
Right. But, they're going to run the theater owners out, and then they're going to have to come in, and if they want to, you know, to keep that market, they're going to have to come in and prop it up.
Oh, wait, what they want? Own all of the channels themselves and keep all the money? Wow.
Weird. I've never heard of this.
It sounds like a good idea until you realize what a losing, just tight margin that movie theaters are. I mean, because of the amount of space you have to have, it is such a big movie machine.
I think the studios wouldn't mind buying up the theaters for cheap, closing down a bunch of them.
Terrible idea.
Yacking up the price so that the theater experience is expensive, and then selling day and date distribution or maybe a week later distribution of their movies to people over the internet.
Yeah, I agree.
And then keeping all the profits.
Charles, what's your take?
I got a friend of mine who runs a boutique theater, and when it was before, it's one of the earlier Avengers movies or something came out. I was talking to him. I was like, "Oh, I'm sure you go see it as soon as the print comes in." He's like, "No, Disney says that you can't let employees see it for 2 weeks or for free anyway, for 2 weeks, and you can't rent the theater out to big groups, and you can't." I was like, my first instinct was like, how the hell are they gonna know?
Yeah,
you're gonna call me. I'm sorry, Disney, I saw the film, I snuck in.
Oh, but they know.
Spies
are everywhere.
Exactly. They do, actually. And he said if they find out, it's massive fines and massive just a blow. It would shut down that movie theater.
Doesn't it seem like we're at a place now, though, where not to dig this hole any deeper, because I know we could talk about it forever, but it's such a fascinating issue to me. But we're getting to the point where it's like, nobody says today in modern cell technology, phone technology, hey, you should still be using a switchboard with a lady behind it transferring your calls around. Nobody says we should keep doing that. And by the same token, I know that there's value in a movie-going experience, and I like that people have taken it in new areas. Like, there's food, and there's recliner chairs, and there's a bar, and there's there's these add-on things to make it a more fun experience. But the reason theaters existed, because that was the only way you could show the stuff. That was it. Yeah. That was your method. Now there are at least five that I can think of in my head methods of getting your content to people in quick and simple and easy, cost-effective and profitable ways, yet we hang on to this theater thing for dear life. And I wonder if it's unique to movies culturally that we're just never going to let that go. The cinema experience will just never go.
I don't think we will. I think we'll always have theaters. I think people will always want to have that experience. The big question is how much is it going to cost? How many theaters and all that?
Yeah.
That's what's changing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I took my friend to see Big Lebowski last year, and he's owned every iteration that's come out on DVD and Blu-ray, but to go into the theater and see it like he did when he was a kid was that experience. And then everybody else was there to see it. So they're quoting the lines, and I get that. I mean, and I don't have the ability to put an IMAX screen in my house, but you know, and 70 inches, I don't have a 70 inch yet, but 70 inches might do where I would pay Disney directly $20-$30 to be able to screen Guardians in my house. If I had a really good,
I would totally do it. I'd do it for 50. Yeah. If I had, because that's what I'm paying for me and the kids and my wife. Anyway, we're paying 50 bucks to see Guardians. So
I would pay 50.
And that,
screw you, Disney.
And that doesn't include drinks or popcorn or anything else. That's just straight up the ticket costs. And it's
I went for $5 today, just so you know.
Well, yeah, but in my case, that's how much all of us would pay to go together. If we had a screener at home and we could do it for 50, I'd just do it. I'd do it for 50 bucks. I'd pay the 50 bucks. We put it on our 70-inch screen. We watch it in high def, and we'd make all our own popcorn for a tenth of the price. And it'd be great.
How important is the big screen now that we've gotten really cheap technology to put VR glasses on our face?
Well,
doesn't it become irrelevant?
See, now here's
I don't think it becomes irrelevant. It's a different experience.
Yeah,
there's still a difference between having a thing on your face and sitting in a darkened theater.
I completely agree with Tom.
Holding hands with your honey and you know, hearing everybody gasp at the same time. There's something to that.
Yeah, there's something to, you know, a guy on a cell phone next to you, a lady in front of you laughing, guy in the back
asking who's
the
other guy.
The guy who didn't shower for 3 days.
Yeah,
the guy who thinks Axe body washes.
Listen, okay, I have a condition. Lay off.
So I'm glad Tom brought this up. I want to at least mention this. I put on a VR headset today to mess around with, I forgot the name of it, Darkroom? Whatever it is. Right. Is it Darkroom? I think it is. Anyway, with the Vive.
I think it
recreates a theater situation. It has all these backgrounds, and I can switch it at will, and I am in a really fancy, large theater for 1 second. I click a button, and I'm now in a small home theater, and I click it again. I'm in a big office space with a giant wraparound TV that I can size and move and mess around with, and it occurs to me that we're not there yet. I'm with Tom. We're not there yet. But it occurs to me there will come a day where it won't even involve a big headset of some sort. It will involve some other sort of overlay, augmented something, something, cheap, less expensive glasses, whatever it is, where we're going to have shared experiences in a shared space with shared virtual environments that have the fidelity we expect from when we don't have that high definition.
And you'll be watching these with the same jackasses that are playing Call of Duty.
but you can limit who you hear and who you don't. Like you and I could watch a movie together and I could mute you. I don't have to listen to you.
That's an advantage over the in-life experience, isn't it?
Sure. And I realize that that's still artificial. I realize that it still isn't quite the same as this communal core human experience of being at the theater together. But I think we get there eventually. And at some point, just the economics is all I'm talking about. At some point, those crack and the theaters don't exist anymore. Or they don't in the form they are now.
Theaters still exist. For the same reason we have opera houses still. There's still people who just want to have that experience, right? Even though most people don't even know what opera really is.
Right.
But it becomes, what you're saying is it becomes a marginalized thing. It becomes a unique thing. And certainly not every
a niche.
Yeah.
But it will always, here's the question though. Will it always be the big weekend release? Will it be the big May 5th movie? Probably not.
Yeah, maybe not. Yeah.
Maybe it's like the Big Lebowski, what do you call that when you go and see an old thing? Whatever it's called, review or whatever. Yeah. It's something like that where it's a classic film or it's a, did you hear the such and such playing?
VR may change storytelling so much that there's a big difference between a 3D movie on a flat screen, even in VR, and an actual virtual movie where you can turn around and put yourself in.
Think about, if I know we're going to go here, I could have put this in predictions, but think about Fahrenheit 451, right? Where it's the walls in your house are screens. And they were basically talking about Skype slot video or Google Hangout slash, this movie experience where the walls in the story are the viewing screens. And think if you could do that, and Scott, I would do it for my network and Giant Size. I'm sure you do it for Frog Pants, where every host on Frog Pants gets to have this virtual comparison where you're sitting in your home and you're experiencing this event together, and then you all go out as a network and talk about it on your shows.
It'd be amazing.
That's kind of where we're going.
I love that.
Quickly.
That kind of stuff sounds awesome to me. So
we're all going to live in shipping containers.
Yeah.
We've got to bring it back to the present day, though, because we've important recall for our friends in Canada.
Oh, no.
Transport Canada's Department of Transportation in Canada posted a recall on May 3rd. We're bringing it to you on Current Geek as a public service. The recall is for the 2017 Galactic Empire AT-AT Walker, due to the central hydraulic system failing in extreme cold temperatures, such as on a planet like Hoth. This could impair laser cannon tracking and affect the walker's ability to maintain balance and could ultimately result in a crash causing injury to Imperial troops. The recall notice was modified on May the 4th to include the hashtag May the 4th.
Yeah. And then they hucked it, I'm sad to say, the next
day. Yeah, it's not. I'm clicking the link and they recalled the recall.
Yeah. Right. It was almost like an April Fool's joke, but it's not there now. I don't see it.
Good point.
Which is a bummer because there were some cool photos involved and some nice Photoshop work. And I noticed that the Prime Minister of Canada also was wearing a pair of socks. One was a yellow C-3PO sock and the other was an R2-D2 sock. And I thought that was awesome. I think the Canadians just seem to have.
Just stop it, Trudeau.
I think more of it.
Stop trying to be the coolest leader in the free world. Just get over it.
Because listen, and this is a statement with zero politics connected to it, okay? But our president tweeted, "May the force be with you." And
What?
No, you said May the 4th of May be with you or something like that. Okay. And then quickly deleted it. He deleted it nearly immediately, but it got screen capped by some people.
Of course.
Because they got it wrong. And it's not unusual. What usually happens with stuffy adults is we get things wrong and we don't understand what the kids are up to. This is a case where Justin Trudeau seems to be sort of in on that stuff. So for good or for ill, he's a very handsome, very nerdy, very funny guy.
Stop being so good looking.
Yeah, quit looking so good and quit wooing us with your nerdy ways.
Yeah. Anyway. Hey, Reddit user Chemist49 bought a box of Blizzard stuff on eBay, and in the box was a CDR, a gold CDR, labeled StarCraft Gold Master Source Code. So he went to Reddit, as you do, asking for advice on what he should do. Eventually, Blizzard contacted him after he did a little playthrough to see if the thing worked, saying that it contained intellectual property and trade secrets, and they would like it back. So, after seeking some legal advice, a very smart move, he gave it back, and Blizzard gave him a copy of Overwatch and $250 in Blizzard store credit. He thought that was the end of it. He'd done the right thing. He got some thank yous. Then Wednesday night, wow. Chemist49 posted that someone from Blizzard called him, offering to pay all his expenses to come to BlizzCon and take him out for drinks.
Yep.
Good guys can win.
Yeah. Plus Blizzard, I mean, look, I'm a big Blizzard fan, so I'm a little biased here, but they are well known for taking care of people who they think deserve to be taken care of. They're very good about this kind of thing.
They really did. Some of this swag he got is freaking awesome. Yeah, must I just also say, right? Must I also say this guy is awesome for being able to build a StarCraft from source, because I'm sure something trying to compile from that environment of 1998.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
What do you have to do to compile this thing?
Yeah. Hey, Siri, compile code, please.
Oh, great. That'll get us some emails.
Great. You just made everyone's phone compile code out there.
Well, 50% of the phones. But hey, I'll say this, though, about StarCraft. So we're getting the free one, or well, not the free one, but the enhanced version in July or June or whenever it is. We already have the free edition of the original game out now running on modern computers. They're really getting big on this idea of bringing StarCraft back. It's interesting that after all these many years, almost 20 years, they're this concerned about a gold disk source code thing from that far back. That seems like it wouldn't have any kind of
important data. Good point, because I understand why in principle proprietary companies want to keep their source code secret. It's a trade secret. They don't want their competition to see how they coded certain things and steal ideas, et cetera, et cetera. But at this point, I mean, I could see an argument probably happening within Blizzard where some people say, let's open source it and turn it into a community project, right?
Yeah.
And the negatives against that would be, well, we don't want to really manage an open source project. Maybe we don't want to put the resources to it. But having the source code out there at this point, I wouldn't think beyond the principle of it would be that damaging.
Yeah, it'd be one thing if all the server code for Overwatch leaked or something or some other thing like that. But for 20-year-old code like this, it's a little strange. The guys at id Software who were making games right around the same time have, within the last 5, 6, 7 years that they open sourced Doom. They open sourced Quake 2. I think even Quake 3 is open sourced at this point. I'm not sure about Quake 3.
Oh, well, but, by the way, today is the 25th anniversary of the release of Wolfenstein 3D.
Oh, that's right.
What?
There you go.
Yeah, played it on my 386 DX 40.
Yeah.
It was pretty awesome. The 386, I think it was. 4 meg of RAM. Yeah. That was a big day. Big time for everybody. But anyway, you know, I guess hats off to Blizzard for recognizing that this guy could have been a wiener about it, and they did a nice thing. Yeah.
Yeah, what if they're not worried so much about this source code, but setting the precedent of, hey, if you're a good person and you report it to us and help us out, we will take care of you. Well, I mean, honestly, well beyond what that disc was worth.
Yeah.
I mean, $250 was well beyond probably what that was worth, but now to get to BlizzCon and all the other jazz, they're just setting that one, they're a good guy Blizzard, right? Mm-hmm. They seem to do almost no wrong with their community. And second, what if Overwatch leaks? Now you have a precedent. Go, oh, hey, I accidentally got your Overwatch code. Can I come to BlizzCon?
Yeah.
Here you go.
Also, they have the money and the resources and the people for the kind of lawyering up that you don't want to see.
Right.
Scary, man.
The B side to this story is, what would you do if you found source code for something? I don't know.
I would probably, I wouldn't know. That's the problem. I'd get it and I'd see that gold CDR and I'd open it and go, what the hell's this? And I'd probably try to put it in. It wouldn't do anything. Like, I wouldn't know any better. So
I'm not going to lie. I don't know that this is actually what I would do, like whether my conscience would get me, but my temptation would be to copy this, not tell yes. anyone that I kept a copy of it, send it back to Blizzard, take all the swag. Yes. And just I secretly have that source code still that I could be like,
I gotta assume. I mean, we all assume that that's what he did. I mean, we good job, send it back. But come on,
I mean, if he did, and he never tells anyone, and he never leaks it out, and it's just, you know, for him and him alone, then
right. Well, there's no harm in it,
and that's exactly what I would do.
Yeah, unless somebody breaks in and, you know, steals the code, right, or whatever. But again, I think it's low risk. It's 20-year-old code. Nobody cares.
Yeah. Right. I would slide my copy of it to Hammond as a bribe to get on Current Geek.
Yeah, that'll that's work.
What
I would do. Dude, anything.
That's what you did. That's how I got here.
You don't have to bribe anybody to get on this show. Yeah. It's easy. Trust me.
You know, back in the day, I had bought a Winnie the Pooh, Will's Disney product for one of the kids. It was a game. And I was messing around on the CD, and they had left all of the original AI files on there. Which is the Adobe Illustrator files. And I don't know why it was on there or if I got an accident disc or what, but I went through there and studied these artists, you know, how they had created that stuff. And I had the original AI files. With the AI files, like you can make it the size of a billboard.
Yeah. If and there would be no Comics Coast to Coast today.
There would be none. But I didn't distribute it. I just kept it in my back pocket, and it's around here somewhere.
Uh-huh. It's backed up somewhere. So now you've said it out loud, and people can find you where you live. It'll be great. Good luck with that.
All right. Finally, HBO has signed on 4 writers to begin development of 4 different Game of Thrones spinoffs.
Whoa.
Max Borenstein, who did Kong Skull Island, Brian Helgeland, who did 42 and Legend, are 2 of the writers. The other 2 are Carly Rae, who has written for Mad Men and The Leftovers, and Jane Goldman, who did Miss Peregrine and Kingsman, The Gold Circle. Those last 2 are working with George R. R. Martin on their projects. HBO told Variety there's no timeline on any of these. They told them to take as much time as they need to just develop a good show.
Well, it's the biggest hit HBO ever had, and I don't think it's any surprise that the once rumored, now confirmed offshoots are in the works. But the bigger question is this, Tom, as somebody who is, you've been a student of those books. You've read them, you've enjoyed them, you've talked about them at nauseam on Sword and Laser. They tend to inform much of the world in terms of the fantasy writing of our day. Where do they go with these? Is it just to explore House Dingleberry that no one only heard of once in one book, and now we're going to go off and just do a whole... like a whole thing.
Well, one obvious place is the Dunk and Egg stories. And those are stories that George R. R. Martin has written. They're short story series, and they predate the Song of Ice and Fire stories. The other thing that you could do is dig into the Game of Thrones history, which has been published. It's Martin approved. That just tells you all of this prehistory that happened well beyond. So you could go back into super ancient times. You could go tell more of what happened over at Essos. Like, there is no end of material that Martin has provided where you could carve out a niche and say, that sounds like a really interesting area to explore.
I want Targaryen. Just prior to all of this, I want all the Targaryen Last Days of the Dragons kind of era stuff. I want that.
Yeah, the Targaryens invading Westeros. That could be a whole series right there.
That could be incredible.
Yeah,
Charles, what are you looking for in this thing? What do you want out of it?
More dragons. I mean, that's. And I want Khal Drogo needs to come back.
Yeah,
I want to see him.
Yeah, you could do it. That's
Khal Drogo stories before he met the Khaleesi.
Yeah. Or it could just be called the Free Cities of whatever. You could just have so much fun with areas that you barely touch on in the current show and books.
Yeah,
there's a great Telltale game based on Game of Thrones that has crossover with the regular series, but it's again all about a house that is mentioned in the books but barely talked about, and it goes off in this whole new direction with new characters and new impact on the overall story. So there's definitely stuff there, but I think this is going to be like the next Star Wars for adults. It's just going to, for the rest of our lives, we're going to get Game of Thrones spinoffs.
And don't undersell Prince Dingus of House Dingleberry.
his demise, though, rough business.
What a way to go.
Like, away in his old age.
That's right. Yeah. Never forget.
Died on the throne.
But four spinoffs. That number is a little, I don't know. In my brain goes, that's a lot.
Does that seem like they're a lot to you, Dunaway? Do you think that's too many, or do you think there's never enough?
I Oh, wow. I definitely think that four is too many. And it's just going to get so fractured. I mean, if you're a fan of one, I don't know.
Are they all concurrent? Like, do we know that? We don't know if they're all concurrent, do we, Tom?
No, definitely not.
Okay.
They may not all be.
It looks like a money. It looks like a money grab. I think
it's. Okay. Well, I mean, wouldn't you though? If you were HBO and your biggest property is about to end, you'd be scrambling for how to figure out how to extend its life a little bit, wouldn't you?
Oh, absolutely.
And honestly, yeah. What's the worst thing HBO's ever done?
But I'm
John
greedy,
from Cincinnati. So. Sorry, that's a terrible show. It's really bad. Well, anyway, hey, these stories are great. I love them all, and they're brought to us many times by listeners like you out there, Tom, who helped contribute today.
Yeah, folks, go to currentgeek.reddit.com and let us know what you want us to talk about. You can submit stories like these folks did, or you can just vote on stories. It takes you almost zero time to just head on over there at some point before we do our show and do some voting. Say, yeah, I like that one. I like that one. I like that one. Thanks to Yogo Craig, another Jay Martin, and Piscator NF, all who submitted stories that were used today.
Very nice. We'd like to take a moment in our show and talk to our guests about some of the projects they're working on, some of the things they're into and things people could look out for. Let's start with Brian Dunaway. Brian, tell me about what's going on with you. Where can people find rad more things from Brian?
Sure. You can follow me at Twitter, the Brian Dunaway, but I'm not here to pimp my wares. I just want to tell you guys what I've been doing. I've been looking at a bunch of old school stuff as far as games go, and I'm kind of getting a little bit of a bug to develop my own little small game. I'm talking teeny tiny for me, not
like
to distribute
cards or board or what
or video.
Video game. All right. Eight bit video game. I haven't decided if I want to do. Like a platformer kind of thing, but literally the smallest amount of game you can imagine, just so I can go, look, I made a thing.
That's awesome. It'd be some sort of little PC thing. We could all check it out if you were so inclined to let us try it.
Absolutely. And I've kind of been playing with the idea of using some Python. I've gotten my feet wet a little bit with it. It's not real robust. Pi game is not hugely robust, but it is... it's fairly simple, and it kind of reminds me of those old days of when I used to sit and clickety-clack around on my Commodore VIC-20 and Commodore 64.
Oh, man. Yeah, peeking and poking all over the place. Yeah.
And so I just want to, you know, just a couple little, maybe I'll do a couple little sprites. I don't know. Just going to play around.
I'm excited. I had no idea you were doing this. Yeah. People should know, Brian just very recently joined my podcast, The Boop Show, which is a video game podcast every week. And having him back on there, just like the old days, has been really great. But now that I know this, we're going to have to bring that up on there and talk about your progress.
That's what got the bug back in me. I was like, you know what? I really miss modding. And then I was like, you know what? I really miss developing, you know, things for Quake. And then I was like, you know what? I miss even more than that. Just simple little games.
Yeah, games are good. Nothing wrong with simple little games.
Ibn and I have always joked about you can make a podcasting game, but you have to play it for 10 years to get anywhere.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
That's the truth. 10 years of grind. You got to grind for 10 years at least.
Yeah. Like Desert Bus.
And you have to unlock a Brian, any Brian, just to actually get ahead in the game.
Yeah. If you don't have a Brian, I mean, I've got three Brians now, and it's pretty good.
I got a Brian too. Brushwood.
Brushwood. And Brushwood's
That's a secret to podcasting.
Yeah. Always bring a Brian.
Always bring your Brian. Well, we'll talk more about Dunaway's stuff at the end of the show and where people can find him. Charles, we switch it over to you. What kind of stuff are you working on these days?
This segment is sponsored by Rogaine because it's never about the plugs. I thought Dunaway would mention it. I'm super excited about Dragon Con, man. He's letting me in a little bit and let me play and man, it's going to be an amazing year this year, getting to see the people who are just coming out of the woodwork to submit their panels. I know it's still months away. I'm like, it's next week. Let's go. I'm ready for Dragon Con. That's what I'm getting excited about.
That's cool.
It's closer than you think.
Yeah. You guys have meetings and stuff out there soon, right? Aren't you guys back and forth?
Yeah, we have another meeting this next month. Me and Charles and Hammond Chamberlain, we've gotten together several times. They're helping me kind of plan stuff a little bit.
Nice.
And they've been a huge help. Huge help.
That's great. Dragon Con coming up soon. Look for their fine work there. All right, quick break. We'll be right back. Got to talk about a sponsor. Don't go anywhere. Do you like to eat fresh? I do. I like to eat fresh. I also like to say hello. Well, thank goodness that there's HelloFresh.com in my life. for a lot more reasons than just that. They make amazing food, and they send it straight to my door, and I get to make amazing meals from this delivery kit, and makes me look like some kind of pro. I'm a terrible cook. I really am, but not when it comes to HelloFresh. They make cooking more fun and easy so I can focus on the entire experience, not just the final plate. Each week, HelloFresh creates new delicious recipes with step-by-step instructions. Those come to you at your door. They are in a special freezer box. Everything is fresh, right down to the exact ingredients, so there's no waste. It's right there at your doorstep. Simple as that. They offer, right now, very light spring meals. And they even introduced some breakfast options, which are definitely worth checking out. Less than $10 per meal. That's just crazy. I have teamed up here on Current Geek with HelloFresh, and they are offering us, as our audience, $30 off for your first week of deliveries if you go to HelloFresh.com and use the offer code CURRENTGEEK30. I really, really enjoy these meals when they come to my house. So does my family. My wife really likes them because, you know, normally she has to do all the work, but not when it's 30 minutes or less. Good gosh, it's simple. And the food's amazing. It's so good. Again, I want you guys to save some money. $30 off your first week of deliveries. Go to HelloFresh.com and use that code CURRENTGEEK30. Big thanks to HelloFresh. Dive into the pop quiz. This is a chance for you guys to see how rad you are.
America scores and wins.
All right, let's get into
Everybody
it.
Knows this is where I shine.
This is your top moment, dude. let your star shine. Don't hide it under a bush. If you're going to answer questions in areas of your expertise, these were this topic was picked by Hammond Chamberlain. The questions were created by Mike Icewarm Boyd, and I'm going to read them. When you get an answer right, you'll hear this. When you get it wrong, you'll hear this. The entire time, Tom keeps score. Let's start with Charles.
Oh, Lord.
Charles in charge. You probably never get that, do you? That never happens to you.
No, you're the first.
All right, good. Here goes. Charles, your topic is Dragon Con trivia.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, as long as it's within 4 years, we're all right.
How fortuitous that we just discussed it. Here is your first question. What did the first Dragon Con take place, or where did it? It says what, but it says...
Oh, it's, I want to say it's the basement of the Hilton?
Yep, and the you missed the last part of my question, which was, and what Sorry. Year? No, you're fine.
Oh, what year? I think we just hit 25 years, so that'd make it 97, 97. Would that be... No, I just had a shirt. Crap, I just got a shirt at the Dragon Con volunteer thing. It said established... Let's go 1989.
Oh, we are so close.
Ah!
The year was 1987.
Ah, and it's on the shirt, man. I'm glad I didn't wear the shirt for the show. That
was a great year.
You're getting a full point because Scott faked you out and split it into two questions.
Nice. Kind of my bad. Yeah, this is why Tom does this. Is he fixes any errors I make. He's a Band-Aid, a human Band-Aid. Here's your next question. What gaming group helped form Dragon Con? These were, I guess these were a role-playing tabletop group.
Right, because it all started on the games. It started role-playing, but a group, like official name of a group?
Mm-hmm.
Two
groups.
Well,
two
like groups. I got to imagine since Scott Johnson's been at the beginning of everything, it was the Johnson Gang Night.
You're so close, but way off. It is Dragon Alliance of Gamers and Role Players, D-A-G-R, whatever that means.
Holy cow.
Next question.
Quarter point flattery bonus.
Well done. What hotel did the first Dragon Con take place in?
Well, I think where it is in the basement of the, I think it was the Hilton.
Incorrect. It was the Piedmont Plaza Hotel.
Really?
The Piedmont.
They're not even part of it anymore.
Yeah, I don't know what that is. Where is that? Where's the Piedmont? Is that somewhere in Atlanta still?
I'm not sure
if it's
still.
Wasn't the answer to the first question that the first Dragon Con took place in the Hilton and you said it was correct?
No, it was the Marriott. Oh, yeah, know what? You know, that is wrong. 87 is the year that is the main part of the question, but you're right. This is conflicting information here, folks. Tom, how do you want to rule it? How do you want to score it?
I was going to say, you can't blame Hammond. Last year, you know, he got traumatized because nobody warned him how bad Saturday was. And he's still having flashbacks.
Yeah, no, I understand that.
Well, it's Ice Worm that created the question.
Yeah, I blame Ice Worm.
My guess is that both are correct. Yeah. That the Piedmont Plaza was what it was called, and the building is now called the Hilton. But I'm just going to give you a point.
Well, see, there you go. Hey, that's what we're looking for. All right, second to last question.
Your code of StarCraft is coming your way, Tom.
In what year did Dragon Con become a 4-day event?
What year did it begin? No. And the answer was going to be 1925.
Here's your hint. The hint is that when it happened, it was that from then on, if that helps you at all. So it's never changed since this time when they
right.
made it.
Right. It doesn't help. I got to imagine it's fairly, I mean, if it started in 87, I'd say it probably took a while to really get established. I'm going to go 2003.
You are, if you'd have put two little bumps on the three, it would have been right. It was 2008 was the correct answer.
And I'm going to give you a third of a point then.
Nice.
That's when I started.
A third of a point because it was 2003. I like that. That math makes sense to me. Final question. What year was the Julie Award established at Dragon Con?
I have no idea. I haven't even heard of that award.
I don't even know what that is.
The parsecs are there. But.
1998 is the correct answer there. I don't even know Brian Dunaway, do you know what the Julie Award is?
The Julie Award is right coming up as soon as I Google it. No, I don't know.
Well, Charles answered correctly that he had no idea, so he gets a point.
All right. Well done. Well done. All right, those are your questions.
I didn't know that was...
Say what? You didn't what? What'd you say?
I didn't know that saying you didn't know was the correct answer.
Oh, it happens all the time unless you do it on purpose, then he'll catch you. He knows the difference. But Tom does this all the time. This is the way we score things. Here's your final, or here's yours, Brian. This isn't your final anything. This is your whole list. Your trivia area is Space Giants trivia.
Oh, Space Giants. Interesting. I don't know that much about them. I watched them a lot, but God, I was a kid. Mm. But go ahead, give me Space Giants.
I don't know why Hammond thinks this is your thing, but we're going to do it.
Well, me and him share a love for Space Giants. But like I said, it's just mostly from my childhood memories.
All right.
Unless you're asking who was Gold Leader, I don't know.
Well, here are some very specific questions about Space Giants. Question number one, what year did the Space Giants debut? Was this a television show?
Yeah. Now, debut in the U.S. or in Japan? I would say he's probably guessing U.S. and I would probably say, 1969.
Oh, you're so close. 66. You flip that 9 or that 6 upside down and you would have had it. 1966.
Right. 1966 to 69.
Yeah.
And yet he called out the Japan-U.S. difference, so we're going to give him 2/3 of a point.
That's pretty good.
Aww.
You're only a third away from
a
real point. Next question. Space Giants was the name of the U.S. version of the show. What was the show/manga called in Japan?
Ah, yes. The manga version was called... I'm going to go with kind of Big Robo.
Kind of Big Robo. Let's find out from the judges if that's right. Incorrect. The answer is Ambassador Magma.
That was my second.
I mean, it's almost what he said. I'm going to give him a half a point.
What a dumb name that is. Ambassador Magma. All right.
That does translate from Japanese to kind of Big Robo.
Oh, does it?
Thank you.
Yeah, all right. Yeah. I want one of our ambassadors to be called Magma. That'd be awesome. What is the name of the evil space emperor in the show?
Oh, yeah. It's Ambassador Evil Giant.
Nope. It's not it at all. The correct answer is Rodak. Rodak.
Oh, that's right. Oh, I actually knew that one.
Mm.
That was goop. Yeah, that's what I get for being a smartass.
Yeah, it's all right.
It's Rodak.
Yeah. It's all good. What is Miko's father's job in the show? I guess Miko's the main dude or something.
Right, right. Yeah, he's the little. He's one of the kids. Is all of them in every Japanese? I bet he's a nuclear technician. Am I close?
You're close in that they both live in Japan, but no, it's journalist. Journalist is the correct answer.
You get a 1/10 of a point for identifying the provenance.
Oh, like yes.
All right, 1/10 of a point. That's better. That's better than nothing. I'll say. Final question. Here's your chance to bring it all home. Final question. Who created the Space Giants series? It is a Japanese person, just so you know.
That makes sense. It was Japanese Ambassador Giant Robo.
Making me choke on my own face. That is not correct at all. It is Osamu Tezuka. Osamu Tezuka.
Charles, can I get a translation on that?
Yeah, what's the translation?
Kind of big dummy.
Okay.
Well, there you go. Full point.
Oh, my gosh. Well done. There's your final question. Tom has the answers, and now we'll tabulate your scores. How did they do?
We ended up with a score, Brian Dunaway, 2.3. Charles, 3.55.
Yes. Yes. Oh, look
well
at that.
Done, Charles, I didn't well botch done. It. Yeah, but you're truly in charge, as it turns out. Well done. Let's dive into the forecast.
The future promises even more startling things to come.
We used to have a little show called Forecast. We predicted the future on that show, and we continue today doing the same thing, but in segment form right here on Current Geek. And we like to talk about technology and culture and other stuff and what happens in the far-flung to the near future. And we let our guests sometimes pop in with what they think. Dunaway has one. And, you know, as much as this is totally a Dunaway question and is kind of weird, it's also kind of interesting. Like, I'll say this. Since I was a kid, and I'll let you explain your prediction in a second, but since I was a kid, I always thought, wouldn't it be great if we had a better way to deal with this? Like, wouldn't it be nice if forgetting about all the, like, there are people with actual, like, disorders, diseases, and stuff like that that would be helped by this greatly. But also just generally, like, wouldn't it be nice? I used to think in Star Trek, why can't they just beam it out of you like in Star Trek? That'd be awesome.
Right.
So tell us your prediction. So
beam what out of you? Okay, so we're talking about the universal problem of waste management.
Yep.
From your body. Poo. So 100 years from now, toilet technology, in my opinion, will be obsolete. We will instead opt for anus worms. You know, so like kind of that symbiotic kind of relationship we see in nature so often. We see those symbiotic.
Did you say semiotic or symbiotic?
Symbiotic.
Yes.
Semi-automatic.
Simulated anus worms that will consume our waste and then fall off like a tail. And then you run away or it runs away. But basically, you don't have to pick it up because it'll burrow its way into the earth.
Okay, but hold on now. Oh, I actually really like that. So let's say the worm. So that's how. But okay, but if you're on the bus, all right, you're on a bus. It's packed with people. You're trying to get to work. You're commuting. What if three people's tails fall off in there? That's no good, right?
Then right. Well, that's the future. Future buses will have no bottoms. It'll be a la Fred Flintstone style, and they'll just.
Wow, I didn't expect I didn't expect another prediction about the future to be layered in with your
this with actually your anus worm. Weird as it is, it kind of has a precedent because there's people who order tapeworms to lose weight.
Yeah, sure. That's true. That's
I've heard of that.
Right. Yep, I have heard of that. I assume that really happens.
But you still poo those away in the toilet, though, right?
I don't know.
No, this is like tapeworm 2.0. Okay, Dunaway, you get to work on that.
Tapeworms expel bits of themselves to spread in your poop, but they stay in your gut.
Oh, do they?
Unless you take medicine. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, you take some medicine.
And you take the medicine, it kills them. So I assume you have some sort of regimen where you keep the worm for so long and then you kill the worm. Is what?
That would be the worst poo ever.
It seems like a bad idea. It seems like a thing you'd want to avoid. I mean, the reason you don't eat a street taco in the middle of Central America is because you don't want a worm. Right. I mean, I don't know why you want one now, but all of that aside. The idea that humans, as we get better at all sorts of things, this seems like an area that would be helpful to me.
If you take a step back and really look at waste disposal, we have advanced a lot just in the last 100 years. I mean, we were just pooping in a hole 100 years ago for the most part, you know, out in the country.
Sure.
Now the city is a little more advanced, but so I mean, another 100 years, I don't see why we wouldn't take another leap.
Yeah, why not?
What if yours is defective? Do you scrape your butt across the carpet to make it work right? Or?
To get rid of the tail? Is that what you're saying?
I'm not in R&D or tech support. I'm the idea guy.
All right. I like
your
idea.
There's a whole new meaning to the phrase, the worm turns.
That's right. As the worm turns. I like this. I also think taking a leap should be the new term we use when we have to get rid of our tail. Take a leap. Yeah, I like it. So, aside from that, like there are actually health precedents for this. Like there are things that we could benefit from in terms of the way our, I mean, listen, nature made us pretty well. We've evolved into some pretty efficient creatures, but we're kind of gross, right? Like we're pretty disgusting. People back in the Elizabethan age walking around in their very frilly, fancy dresses and white wigs, didn't shower or have a bath for a month or some crazy thing. Mm-hmm. And it was disgusting. And you couldn't cover it up with enough perfume. Like, it was just awful. So we've gotten better in all sorts of hygienic ways. Here's the one way we struggle a little. And this sounds
See,
like
I'd
a great
have
idea.
A transporter.
Would you? Yeah, I think I would too, actually.
You just want it. Well, yeah. Well, let me tell you something, Tom. You just want it to magically disappear. All right.
It ain't gonna wouldn't happen. That be the best?
Well, if it right. doesn't, but it, listen,
why not? Walk on, beam it out. Done.
Yeah. No, I'm with Tom. Tom's totally right because it's not magic,
until you
Brian.
Accidentally.
It's not. It's not magic. What it does is it goes to the moon. Moving. It goes to the moon.
Go ahead. Oh, but you'll attach a worm to your butt.
Yeah,
that seems safer to you somehow.
Yeah,
that seems. I think you'd get more pink eye from having a worm on your butt than anything else.
No, you teleport
when
it.
when you get your colon transported out to wherever it's going to go. Tom,
you,
then we'll talk.
You teleport it. I'm telling you,
technology has to be refined. But I'm saying
we have an entire asteroid belt that nobody lives in yet until we get to, you know.
Wait, when you say asteroid belt.
I'm talking about the actual system belts that right. exist in our system, the
actually,
solar system.
I actually had a
beam it all there.
Right.
The waste disposal guys are now called belters in honor of Sci-Fi's Expanse.
They have their own patois.
I mean, I don't want to make things rough for them any more than they already have, but I'm just saying there's a way to remove it, and it's out of sight, out of mind. It's not filling some landfill. It's not a worm you hope burrows into the ground. I'm all for teleportation. We're done. That to me usurps all of this. It's like saying, I've made the first flying bicycle. And you're like, well, I made a car. Oh, all right. Well, skip the bicycle then. You know what I mean? We're going to skip. We're skipping right over anus worms. They're going out.
Come on. Future comes, you know, a little bit at a time. It doesn't happen all at once.
Yeah, baby steps.
Baby steps.
You'll be making those when your tail is full or whatever.
Yeah.
All right. Well, there's your forecast. One of the best ones we've ever done, if I'm to
that baby, one
make
of the
an
best
argument
ever,
for it. Before we get to our email, I believe we have a little bit of a heart out for Charles. Charles, you got to go to a thing. You're in charge of a thing. Charles is in charge of a thing.
Of a thing.
Yeah.
I am. And yeah, I probably should jump. It's been amazing.
Before you scuttle, make sure people know where they can find you. How do they get more of you on the internet? Where can they go?
You can go to giantsizeteamup.com for my show, Breaking the Panel, which is essentially a sister show to Current Geek. We talk about many of the same topics, except for anal worms. That's yet to make a.
There's still time.
Yeah, there's time.
There's still time.
Invite me on. Invite me on.
You know, we're going to have to now to see how we can do that.
Get a secret.
But definitely Breaking the Panels at Giant Size Team Up Network. I do kind of a motivational Kevin Smith storytelling meets Tony Robbins motivation show called Rock God of Podcasting, where I regale stories from my life and help. You solve your problems and those kind of things. And I'm listening to one of my most favorite shows ever, Botched, a D&D podcast with Phil and Dennis and those guys over there. They're amazing. So there's where you can find me. And it's all at Rock Out of Pod, facebook.com/ Rock Out of Podcasting. And Giant Size Team Up has all their own stuff too. You can check that out.
Nice. Well, thanks, man. It was really, really, really great having you on. Thanks for being with us today.
I appreciate it. And any time. And I'm sorry, I heard that, Tom, you and you're not going to be able to come to Dragon Con. I think Scott.
No, I won't be making it out this year, unfortunately. I'll miss you guys.
Yeah, I have a 25th anniversary to go to.
Wow, well, yeah, that's kind of important.
25 freaking years. Think of
Damn.
That.
Damn.
Single-handedly awesome. Holding down the statistic for people staying married right here.
That's amazing. Man.
Yeah,
that's
pretty
awesome.
Intense. All right, well, dude, take care, be safe, and have fun at karaoke, as we like to say here.
Thanks a lot, guys. All I appreciate
we'll
it.
We'll see you later.
Cheers.
So let's get to this email real quick. We get emails at currentgeek@gmail.com. They come in to us each and every week. You guys always have something fun to say. Got an email from Horace, although the H and the O are capitalized and the rest isn't, so I don't know if I'm supposed to say Horace or
Horse.
I don't think it's horse. Anyway, it says, hi, guys. I saw Guardians 2, and it looked really expensive. Do you guys agree? Do you think any of the other Marvel movies look like they cost that much? That's a really interesting and simple question, but I hadn't really thought about it.
What's interesting is I looked it up. Guardians of the Galaxy 1 cost $232 million to make.
Mm-hmm.
Not by far the most expensive movie ever made, but they spent a lot on it. Guardians 2 cost less. It cost $200 million.
Oh, my gosh, really? Now, that surprises me. I would have thought
Now, I know Horace is asking, look, based, you know, did it look expensive? Not actually how much.
Yeah.
I just thought that was interesting.
And in that case, I'm going to say, yeah, like effects wise and other stuff, it was pretty high bar. It looked real good to me. You know, it's very CGI, as you might expect from a movie like this, a lot of the action sequences and stuff, but they looked really good. And the wire work and green screen stuff looked amazing. I mean, it looked like a really well put together effects heavy picture.
That when they're on Ego's planet, it looks like you're inside of a late 70s album cover.
Oh, it's
like,
amazing.
It's crazy good.
Yeah, it's amazing. Nice. And his, that cool, like, I mean, Dunaway, you'll see this when you see it, but that cool, like, he would recreate scenes from his past and do it with, they look like porcelain almost or whatever. Mm-hmm. It was such a weird aesthetic, and it's super cool, very effective, and looked really great. So I'm with him in that it looked really expensive, but to know that it actually costs less is really, that's fascinating. I wouldn't have guessed it either. I would have thought it would have cost more, but mainly because, you know, Chris Pratt's now in superstar territory, and he wasn't so much.
Whenever you make a sequel, you have to pay all the actors more. They all want more.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
Yeah, plus you have some new ones, and
Pratt's in demand, so.
Yeah, plus you had, who's the guy from, Ving Rhames was in the end of that? Spoiler, isn't it? Should I not say that, Ving Rhames is in it?
No, you shouldn't.
I probably shouldn't have said that. It's just a tiny bit, guys. It's like a cameo. Hey, everybody, I'm Ving Rhames. It's no big deal.
And how they all died for real at the end.
Yeah, everyone died.
How expensive was that?
The entire place. Everyone died. It was great. Anyway, thank you for the email. We love getting those. Brian Dunaway, the pleasure is ours having you on here. We really liked having you on. But we'd be remiss if we didn't both thank you and let you tell people where they can find you on the internet.
Absolutely. Thank you, Scott and Tom. I always love coming on the show. You can visit me on Twitter at the Brian Dunaway. My website is briandunaway.com. What do I do there? Well, I post Film Sack show notes, which me and you are going to be involved with tomorrow. Sack and The Shining.
Yeah.
I'm pretty excited. Pretty stoked about that.
Yeah. Speaking of Stephen King.
What's that now?
Speaking of Stephen King, we got a little bit of Stephen King to get through tomorrow. It's going to be fun.
Yes, we do. Mm-hmm. We do indeed. And what else? Oh, The Boop Show, which I'm really, like I said, it inspired me to get back into video gaming, but it inspired me to maybe create a little something of my own. So thank you, Scott.
Yeah.
For that. That's great. It's fantastic.
Check that out tomorrow. It's going to be good. Frogpants.com/BOOP is where you can find that show. Brian was on the last two episodes, and you'll have a great time. And the Brian Dunaway on Twitter, yeah?
Yeah, that's me.
And all over the community. Brian's as the old timer as it gets. He's one of the first people I ever truly podcasted with.
He's the oldest person we know.
That's true. Mm-hmm. I've known you longer than most people I know in my life, but it was awesome having you on, man. Thanks.
And I'm older than either of you know because I'm a Highlander.
Yeah, there you go. Well, only one must. And how's it go? Only one.
Only one.
There, there can be only
there one. There can only be one. Or there can only be one. There you go. May the fourth of the fifth be with you. Tom Merritt, anything you'd like to mention before we cut out, sir?
You know, if you like audiobooks.
I do.
I wrote one.
You
it's
did?
It's called Pilot X. Yeah. Now, you can get it in print. You can get them in ebook, but there's an audiobook out there. You can have it in your ears right now. It's a time traveling space opera adventure. If that sounds fun, go check it out. Audible.com or anywhere books are sold.
Who does the reading on that? Who's your
Kevin T. Collins. He's done a few of the David Weber books too.
Oh, that's very nice. I was just gonna see if I could play a tiny taste of it here. Oh, there is no sample yet. Dang it, I want one.
Give me the freaking sample.
Yeah, where's that sample? Oh no, here it is. They got one now. Hold on.
The Fringe. Commander, I've got something. What is it, specialist?
Oh my gosh, that's so cool.
That is great.
How many people in this show right now can say they have somebody with an audiobook up on Audible? And the answer is only one of us. It's Tom Merritt, everybody. It's amazing.
Well, there you go.
Right. Well done. Mark that
I
off
know
your,
a guy.
You know a guy? Mark that off your bucket list, Tom, because well done.
Yeah, I have a bucket with a list on the side. I'll mark it.
Good, good. You'll need that bucket until the anal worm technology comes along. So hang on to that bucket.
Right.
Yeah.
I keep my anal worm. Yeah.
Thank you, everybody, for being with us. We really appreciate it. It's been way fun tonight. If you'd like to have more of the show in your life, you can go find us over on the internet at currentgeek.com. All our contact details are there. So please feel free to do that. Oh, gosh, what else? Our email address, currentgeek@gmail.com, currentgeek.reddit.com for those stories we talked about. It's going to do it for us, for me, for Tom, and our guests. We'll see you next time.
I gotta go drop off a worm.
Hi, and welcome back to Legal Geek. This week, we review a Court of Appeals decision about whether changes have occurred to the on-sale bar and patents after the America Invents Act of 2011, also known as the AIA. The AIA was the most recent major reform by Congress to U.S. patent law, and it included some significant changes, such as giving patent priority rights to the first inventor to file an application instead of the first person who invented a given invention. The wording of what serves as prior art to a patent application was also updated. That latter item is what was in controversy in this case. Two pharmaceutical companies were doing battle over four patents related to the anti-nausea drug Aloxi, but there had been a purchase agreement made between the patent owner and another party privately in early 2001, more than a year before filing these patent applications in 2003. There is a one-year grace period for sales before patent applications are filed, but that did not apply here in view of these facts. The recently amended on-sale bar of the patent law states that an applicant is entitled to a patent unless the invention was in public use, on sale, or otherwise available to the public before a patent is filed. The key difference from the old statute was the addition of the otherwise available to the public language. The argument boils down to whether the added words, or otherwise available to the public, just applies to the words on sale, or is just another separate type of disclosure that triggers a bar date. Before the AIA, there were decades of court precedents that deemed even private sales to qualify as bar date triggers that could block patents. In other words, it did not matter before the AIA whether sales were public or not. The alleged infringer was arguing that the status quo of precedent should not change under the new AIA language, while the patent owner argued that only public sales that publicly disclose the details of an invention trigger a bar to patentability. The Federal Circuit disagreed with the patent owner, effectively confirming that the on-sale bar remains much the same as it was before AIA. This is a big result because an opposite conclusion would potentially gut the effectiveness of an on-sale bar, by allowing private sales and commercialization efforts more than a year before being forced to file a patent application. In this case, all the patents were therefore deemed invalid, and the generic drug can hit the marketplace unscathed by patent infringement claims. The bottom line is, when Congress changes laws in even minor ways, there are always viable arguments regarding how far the changes go. This case settles a question that had been openly debated about the on-sale bar for the last 5 years. And it maintains the long-standing limits on how far the U.S. patent grace period can be stretched by potential patent applicants. Furthermore, we can always count on big pharma companies to test the limits of patent law and help us clarify our rules. Happy Cinco de Mayo, everyone. Thanks for listening. Please provide feedback and segment suggestions to me on Twitter at BuckeyeFitzy.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Yes, get more at frogpants.com.